Hello and welcome to another episode of Season of the Witch with your hosts Rowan Oaken and Tess Lauren, the show where we spill some tea on the occult and read the leaves to filth.
This week we're talking shit about Harmony Nights.
We do talk shit about Harmony Nights. We are
you
talking
talk
about,
shit about Harmony Nights.
I talk shit about Harmony Nights. We're talking about things to do, to not do. We're talking about embarrassing things that we did when we first started out in the craft.
Definitely talking about starting out in witchcraft and things that made us cringe and yes. Us making you cringe this entire time.
Yes.
So
cringe fest. It's the equinox today. It's the spring equinox.
Congratulations.
I don't know. I said congratulations.
Congratulations.
You made it.
you made a star a baby. Hooray.
Oh, yeah, my you God. Did. You I'm made so- it.
I'm saying, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
It's already been a hard year. It's like,
I know.
Christ.
2020 plus two.
Oh my God. Literally. I was so like, I feel like autumn wasn't long enough and took forever to come. And then winter just dragged on.
Yeah.
And I've just been waiting. I've just been waiting and waiting for spring to come. And today I woke up and the sun was shining and I was like, I'm going to garden. And like, I made a lemon drizzle cake.
What did you garden? Tell me what you gardened. What did you plant?
So I planted honeysuckle. I planted more passion flower.
Nice.
I planted my angelica root and some borage today.
I planted my angelica root in September. I feel like that's
what the packet told me to do. No, that's fine. Mine was already in a pot. I just moved it to the garden.
Oh, okay. I planted my angelica root. Well, I planted angelica seeds in September. And I was like, oh shit, I've done it wrong.
No, that's correct. Yeah, you're right. That's correct.
I was doing sunflowers and amaranthus, I was saying yesterday.
Was nice and amaranthus is so pretty.
Love lies bleeding. Like, they just, they look, that's like the name of them. They're
that's
like
what they look
droopy at. Red things. They're like catkins. They look like droopy catkins.
They do. Yeah, that's actually a good way to put it.
Yeah. Like years gone by, I would have felt the pressure around Sabbats and, you know, equinoxes and blah, 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 blah. I'd really feel the pressure. I'd really feel it. I'd really be like, I've got to do something. I've got to make something. I've got to be something. Yeah. I've got to celebrate it in a particular way. And as the years have gone by, I seem to do less and less. I really do. I
same.
You know, yeah. If I really need it, I'll do something ceremonial. If I'm in the mood, I might try and make something that really corresponds with the day and really, really go ham all out for it. But some of them just slip me by these days, and I'm becoming quite a crap witch because of it.
Yeah, I feel you on that so hard. And I've only recently, in the last couple of years, well, since I moved to England, have actually even used the changing of the seasons in my practice. I never used to. And then once you get on it, you just feel that moving sense of guilt if like you don't do it right. I say that a lot, like in our practice, like there's so much guilt, like it's just anxiety inducing.
Yes.
And then it's like weird. It's like you hit a point where you've hit the peak of your anxiety with your witchcraft and you're just like, man, I just don't care anymore.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of there too. And I think a lot of it, When I was at the peak of doing things, making cakes, doing full blown banquet celebrations, I was seeing a lot of things on social media, and I was thinking, well, you know, I obviously need to step my pussy up. This is not good enough. Like, you know, what I'm doing is like shite. You know, so I did. I would bake and I would celebrate and I'd get my son crafting and making things. Like today, like I'd completely forgotten. I got an audio message from Jenny Blum, the Comfy Cozy Witch, and she was just like, happy equinox. I was like, oh shit, really?
Oh, no. You're like, yeah, happy equinox, right back at you.
You too. I must admit, I do like the sentiment of the both the equinoxes. Just the idea of balance and the idea that, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, here we are celebrating this equinox, and in the Southern Hemisphere, so are they. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that balance. It's kind of cute.
I think now, so more, I celebrate the ones that mean a lot more to me. and just kind of like let the other ones go by the wayside.
Yeah.
Like I'm very into the autumn and spring equinox.
Yes. Yes.
That, those are my two that I identify with. I like autumn because I'm an October baby and I just identify with the autumn season. And then spring for me, because I forage as a herbalist, is like the sun comes out and I can do what I love the most. And those two I identify with. So I think it's like finding the ones that you really, really like. And then kind of going forward with that, as opposed to like putting Samhain, pressure.
Like every witch loves a bit of Samhain,
right?
Okay, you know what? This is controversial. I love me Halloween and Samhain. So like, yeah, no, okay, like, I do. But I celebrate Halloween. I don't celebrate Samhain, really. I don't. Yeah. I just feel like they're both the same, and it wouldn't matter if I was celebrating either or, because they just kind of come together as one.
Totally agreed.
I don't separate them.
I don't. I find it, I say Samhain in the witchy community, but really what I'm doing is Halloween probably half the time.
Yeah, I'm dressing up. I'm getting drunk. It's
I'm just being spooky and witchy, you know?
I'm just being spooky. Yeah, I'm lighting candles. I'm drinking all the PSLs, all the pumpkin spice lattes.
Oh, I told God. You, I've got it frozen. I've got it in the freezer. I bought pumpkin spice syrup from Starbucks and put it in the freezer so that as soon as that
first everyday hero. Leaf hits,
like as soon as I see it hit, I'm like, right, pumpkin spice. I'm going to get there before every other witch, every other August. Bitch out there. Yeah,
August.
I'm going to be the most basic whore on earth. I'm ready for it.
I love it.
Oh, wait, like, what's our topic today? What are we talking about?
I think we were talking about like how we started off in our practice and like how it's evolved and the like the cringy things that we used to do.
Cringe fest.
Do I have some stories for you?
Oh, I want an okay. I want you to go in first with the cringiest thing that you did as a wee old starting out crafty witch.
I remember being like really young, and this is before I actually got into like practicing tarot properly. I just had like some really crappy tarot cards. I was probably like maybe 15 or 16, and I would like go to my friends' houses and like do tarot readings, pretending like I knew what the hell I was talking about.
Oh, nice. I love the confidence.
And like I'd go over and my friends would be like, do a tarot card pull for me. And I would just like, I knew like some of the base meanings to some of the like major arcana, but like I didn't know like meaning. And so I had like all my friends convinced in these readings that like all these things are gonna happen, and then like, oh, Tess was like super deep and she knows what she's talking about. And it was so bullshit.
I love it.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to all the people that might be listening to this that had a shitty tarot reading for me at one point in their life.
It's like, I left my boyfriend because of you.
Yeah. Oh my God. And that's what it is when you're in high school. It's like, oh, is Jared going to fall in love with me in math class? Like,
I love how actually gives a shit about that as well.
Telling my friends to carry like certain crystals or like herbs in their pouches so they get like they get to make out with the person they like at the school dance. Like, what is that? Like,
I love it. That's brilliant. I think we've all secretly been that witch at, like in our early witchy days. And, you know, like I think I remember like trying to do tarot readings with Pokemon cards.
That is such a millennial moment. Oh my God, I love that.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember it like it being something really stupid, like a Pokemon card, and me being dead ass serious. Like,
I mean, fair enough. They all are like technically elements.
Yeah. Yes.
I know.
Oh my gosh. So like, maybe that works. It's legit practice. It's one of those things where like so many cards do come out these days in terms of tarot cards. You know, where does legitimacy lie, actually? Can you do it with Pokemon cards?
My friend has a Pokemon themed tarot deck. Why not?
Right? Maybe I wasn't use them, but maybe I wasn't as bad as I thought, you know? Like one of the things that really like when I was talking about this topic when we're kind of like, oh, this is an interesting and fun topic, was just the amount of things I bought in the early days.
Oh my God, I was going to talk about this. Yes.
Things. Like, what items, when you look back on, did you feel that you must have that you just don't pick up, you just don't use anymore?
Oh, that's a really good question. When I started out as well, like, I don't know, I think we all, like, we've discussed this before, we all kind of took the Wicca route because that was, especially when you're our age, because that wasn't, there wasn't much else out there and there wasn't like the openness and individuality that there was at the time. So like, and Wicca like gives you, you know, and you're, if you're Wiccan and you're listening to this, that's sick. I love that. But Wicca, to me, it gives you like so many guidelines and like certain tools that you, like every Wicca guidebook that you use has a picture of like an altar set up, and you've got like your chalice and your athame, and you've got your wand and you got your water dish or whatever, like your whatever to represent the elements. And pentagram, wearing a pentagram, that was my biggest thing. When I started out, I was pentagram heavy. Pentagrams on my cloth for my altar table, pentagrams on my cups and my chalices, pentagrams on my necklaces, on my rings, on my dresses, on my fucking shoes. Like I had pentagrams everywhere. And I don't wear a single, I don't even know where a pentagram is now in my house. I haven't got a clue. No pentagrams in my house. You know what I mean? I think that's like the biggest one.
Yeah. We've got one hidden away and stuff. And that is kind of from the olden days back when, same here, you know, I felt like it had to be out on an altar space. I think probably the most unused item for me would be the athame, some kind of ritual knife. I feel it was one of those things where like, I felt like I had to have it. And as soon as I got it, I could instantly feel that there was just no connection to the idea. And I was like, maybe it's the knife. And that's what the book says. So I was like, I need to try and find a different knife. And I just kind of, it made me feel weird. And I felt like because of me feeling strange, it felt that I was the one that was wrong because I was connected to a particular object that Wiccan literature tell you to use and or have.
Mm-hmm. And I have one and it just sits on my altar. I don't use it for much in particular. I used to use it for like opening and closing with my circle, which I'll probably touch on later, but I no longer even do that. So my athame goes unused.
Yes. Yes.
So
that was exactly what I used it for. And now if I'm going to do a circle, maybe we should get to that one as well. I would normally either use a broom or a wand, my finger.
I was just gonna say, I use my finger. I'm like,
just like draw a little circle around, and that will be it. But you know, let's get to circles. You know, rarely am I casting a circle these days with the stuff that I'm doing.
Mate, I don't even think I know what I'm doing. Like if I was to cast a star, I don't even think like, does anyone know how to do it properly? I don't think there is a way. Like, you know,
I have it written down and every single time I fuck it up all the time. I'm like, sorry, spirits of the North. I said it wrong.
You're that's like, not I you, stepped out a fucking circle. No, no.
Yeah. And I'm like, it's like, oh, it's more of an oval. Is that a problem? It like,
and also like, there's so many times where I forgot to close it. Like I've opened a circle and then I'm like, hey, I'm done my ritual. Yep. Bye. See you later.
I think that, you know, there's a time and a place for a circle. I do feel like it heightens for me. It does heighten a feeling of ritual, of ceremony. But I kind of felt that whenever I had to do any kind of magical work, I always had to have a circle. And I really just don't think that's the case. I think that's complete bullshit. Like, stop doing circles all of the time. Like, and a lot of the literature tells you to do it.
Yeah. And I think this kind of leads back to like when you start your practice, because when a lot of us, when we start our practice, or at least, you know, for us, when we did, again, like I said, that openness wasn't there. And so like you had these books and this literature, and you had a few YouTubers at the time, maybe, or like, you know, blogs that you could visit that would like give you information. But I think the main thing for me, and if I could go back in time when I was starting my practice or even thinking about starting my practice, I wish I could have just been like, sit down, take your time. You don't have to know everything at once. You don't have to rush things. And you certainly don't have to listen to everybody else's opinions. you can form your own, and you can form your own way of doing things. And no, don't stress and have anxiety if those things don't go the way that you want them to. Because at the beginning of my practice, that was like the entire thing was I would get so stressed out if a spell or a ritual didn't go the way that I wanted it to, or if I didn't have a certain color candle, or if I didn't have a certain like type of salt, or, you know, or if the herbs I had, you know, were from the grocery store, that would freak me out. I hated that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was it's just stressful. The amount of anxiety I put myself through when I started my practice was so unnecessary.
Like, you know, I feel like that is something I may have mentioned it on the show before, is I think there is a certain element of fallacy behind correspondence. Correspondence is actually something that has been designed by a person and developed upon in other literature. And a lot of it is very arbitrary, actually. I'm going to have some witches really come in for me now for that one. But it's, I think is there's a big myth behind correspondence, and actually it's a lot more personal too. And it's a lot more dependent on its growing conditions, your relationship to it. I just think there's, and I think one of the issues as well is the kind of almost hegemonic nature of beginner literature, of how it is all, you kind of read one thing. I'm playing with something in my hand and I don't even know what it is. What is this? What is it? I'm so distracted. It's a USB light thing that I got free with something, and it's weird. Anyway, that's my little ADHD brain can't cope right now.
Derailed.
You read all this beginner literature, and because it's all so similar, you assume that it's canon, it's truth, it's factual. Oh, God, and you're told to kind of work on intuition and to connect to things. Then why am I listening to what someone else's connectivity is? And actually, these writers are all then writing based on someone else's literature. So it all just feels like truth. And I think that was something really difficult for me to get my head around. And you're talking of beginner literature as well. I feel that there's such a thing as reading too much beginner literature.
I think I absolutely agree. Yeah.
You know, you'll find that you're reading the same bloody stuff over and over again. Yeah. And I wish I had just selected a few that kind of authors that either really resonated to me or had a similar background or wrote from a similar geographical context. And I wish I'd gone in and thought about author, not text. That was something I just didn't do at the start. You know, what's their positioning? Why are they writing this? Are they writing this because they want to, you know, make a bit of cashola out of this? Is it someone who is a bit of an influencer who's now moved into, I'm looking at you, Harmony Nice, who's now moved into writing a book, you know? Like,
you just threw some absolute shade. Sorry. Oh my God.
Boom.
Peace and love,
love and light, harmony.
Christ.
You know, like, because there is a particular way of approaching the subject that she takes in those texts that then mirrors a lot of the texts from beforehand, and doesn't, I feel a lot of them didn't really give agency over to the person, and they read more like manuals, and I think that was very stifling in my early exploration. But that's a really difficult thing for a beginner, just to be like, it's a bit hokey pokey otherwise. You know, you just kind of go in it and just dick around until you feel like you're happy with it. So where's the line?
No, and this is it. And I feel I wish they could do that little fish move.
It was a good fish move. Thank you.
I really wish I would have been my eyes would have been more open to the idea that unfortunately witchcraft is marketable and it makes a lot of money. It's profitable, it's marketable.
Yes.
And because of that, you get, like you said, you get a lot of the same shit over and over again, continuously. And that leads to so much stress, like I said before. Yes. And it leads to almost like a stop in the road, because you get all these beginner texts and you get to a certain point and you're like, okay, but what do I do next? Because you feel like you need to be following what they're doing. And then you just stop because you're like, I don't know what to do, because you have no sense of individuality, because these books have told you that you have to do it a certain way or it has to be done this way.
Yes.
And even though the majority of the books aren't always the same, because in that sense, because obviously they're individual authors and they're individuals within their practice, you do have that overlap of like the correspondences, for example, with things like the correspondences and symbology and the correspondences and colors and, you know, certain things. Like, you can't find a text out there that doesn't say sea salt for protection. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's, it's everywhere in every text. And then like it really stunted my growth as a practitioner when I got started again, because there was a stop and start to my practice quite a lot. But the second time round, it really, really messed me up because I was so stressed and unsettled because I didn't know where to go.
Yes.
Like there was nowhere to go for me. And I had to take a step back to be able to look at it from a different perspective and come back to it and be like, oh, well, fuck it. I'm just going to do it the way I want to. I give zero shits about these rules. No shits given.
Do you know, there was something that, like, no, I've had them on the show before from the Witch Bitch Amateur Hour, and Macy.
I love them so much.
If there's any podcast that I could recommend as much as I possibly could, it would be the Witch Bitch Amateur Hour, just constantly howling with laughter. But there's a thing that Macy has mentioned many times on the show that kind of really struck a chord with me at the same time, I think, that it was kind of happening for me, was just ignore all the bullshit with correspondences and actually just look into some of the mundane properties that these things have. You know, you mentioned sea salt and protection. Mm-hmm. You know, we use sea salt to cleanse wounds. You know, so it has the properties and abilities to, you know, so look into the mundane nature of these things. What do they do? Of course, that's a bit complicated when it comes to like stones and crystals, because they don't really do much, like in their mundane sense. So a lot of that is maybe a bit more complex. You know, color correspondences, how, you know, actually colors have an ability to impact an emotional response in humans. Totally. They can impact mood. You know, look at the pink prison study that, you know, where it calmed prisoners down, for example. So, you know, what can pink do in that sense in terms of soothing? And that really shifted that kind of like, it gave me permission to say, actually, I can trust myself. I can research things for myself, and I don't have to worry what a book tells me to do. I can think about what do I take from it and what do I ignore from it? Because sometimes things are really conflicting as well with correspondences. I don't know whether you've ever had that. It does one thing, but it also does another thing. And everything exercises demons. Everything is like, this is good for exorcism. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever noticed?
Not only that, but it's like everything runs negativity and everything gets rid of them demons. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, get rid of them demons.
Get rid of those demons. And I find it really funny, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but there is that kind of overlap between where, as a witch, this, I'm totally going off the rails here, but like that just reminded me of something that I always thought was really weird in my practice when I started, and still continue to this day think is kind of weird. As witches, we will, if someone goes, oh my God, like, you're a witch, do you believe in the devil? And our immediate response for the most part is to go like, no, I don't believe in the devil because I don't believe in God. So if I don't believe in God, I can't believe in the devil. And we have this like whole thing. But in reality, there are some people out there in witchcraft, in the community, who do celebrate the idea of the devil.
Satanic and witches.
Yes, exactly. And so like, I feel like there is, again, we contradict ourselves completely all the time. Yes. And there is that, like, you know, like we can't, as an individual, yes, I can turn around and be like, I don't believe in this certain set of rules, or I don't believe in this certain belief system or whatever. And that's fine on my individual. But when we start preaching for other witches and the witchcraft community as a whole, that's when it starts to get a little bit messy. Do you know what I mean? And that's for up the ones that are starting out.
Yeah, you know, like, well, paganism is this huge spectrum, as is witchcraft. And I think it's very easy for beginners not to see that and to actually see a specific perspective that they've got to go down. And, you know, we mentioned satanic witches just then. And I think that's an interesting one, just in terms of witch types. And I've done an episode on witch types before, and I feel, you know, my kind of feelings are very similar still. You know, I remember on the episode, I kind of said, oh, you know, I feel like I'm kind of like a bit of a green witch. I'm a bit of a this witch. And I feel that that was something, looking back as a beginner witch, that I spent far too much time thinking about.
Yes. Like overanalyzing.
Maybe not so much like in the very early days, because witch types didn't really exist when I first started.
No, but they didn't when we started them.
No, like as I developed, I was like, oh shit, like I'm supposed to be a type of witch. Who am I? Yeah. And it's just big literally existential have an
identity crisis. You have an identity crisis as like a witch, because you're like, oh, I do like kitchen stuff. Like I like to bake. So maybe I'm a kitchen witch, or I like to, you know, forage. Maybe I'm a hedge witch, or, oh, you know, I use a little technology. Maybe I'm a technology witch. Like that's a thing. Like there's so many, anybody who excels in something in their practice could be considered that type of witch.
Yes.
But also, and I found this as well, when I started identifying as a herbal witch, it was that stop in the road where I was like, can I talk about other things? Can I give advice to other witches about other things? Because they look at me as a herbal witch, or, I did a lot of osteomancy. So people would be like, oh, well, you work with bones. What else do you like? It limits you.
Yes.
I think it limits you so much because you put yourself in a box. And then again, that anxiety comes because you're unsure, especially on social media, especially being a public figure as a witch, sometimes putting ourselves out there. Everybody's on the internet. Like, how do you come out of that shell once you put yourself in that box? Like, it's really, really difficult. And I've struggled with that quite a lot.
And I've got a feeling we've mentioned this one on the show before. And I think it links to something else you've mentioned before. It's the commodification of the craft. I think that's a word that I've used before. It's the selling of the craft. Yeah. It's the,
yes, exactly.
You know, we have witch types because suddenly witchcraft became marketable. And I think if you can kind of have that as a bit, you know, I'm kind of talking to all of those starting their journey out there listening today. If you can have that in your head, that the craft is being commodified, it's being sold to you. Mm-hmm. If you can kind of, the sooner you realize that, the sooner you can step back and you can have a bit more of an authentic practice that belongs to you and doesn't belong to something that's being sold to you, because everything in the craft is actually free. It exists out there in the world free. Like
our going back to our roots, you know, the original witches and practitioners didn't have these fancy Etsy shops and these like corner stores and these crystals or anything. You know, it was getting your hands dirty. It was using what you had in the earth and on, you know, on the earth. And, you know, even I don't know. I'm fumbling over my words here because how do I put this? I agree with you. And I think that I get very frustrated when someone goes, oh, I have to buy this and I have to do this, because we've all been there. We all started out that way.
But it's the realization.
Literally, like, and don't even get me started on cultural appropriation.
I've not mentioned on the show in a while.
oh my God. Like, it's just, it's like you said, and I said, it's marketable. And if you can get your head, like you said, around the fact that you don't have to go out and purchase something, that you can go get something. Y'all, don't buy a wand on Etsy. Go get an oak stick. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to. And you can put your own energy into something when you're making it and crafting it. Because if you buy something off the internet, if you buy something from a store, that's manufactured and it's not got any life to it whatsoever, you know? And that's the whole idea of our practice. Why are you laughing?
I think so, like, this is our like third episode where we're like hating on Etsy shops.
I don't think last week's episode I don't know how we were. Did we mention that with aliens? Did we mention Etsy on the aliens one?
Maybe not
on the aliens.
I'm quite tempted to put this episode before the aliens one, actually. This might be really confusing to listeners because I feel like this is quite a nice one for as soon as can launch for spring equinox. We'll just do everything out of order. But maybe we can edit in some horrible things to say about Etsy shops in the alien episodes afterwards. We could always do that if we feel like that we want it as a running theme, you know, just us just being rude to Etsy shops.
Etsy's run by lizard people.
Like, really? No, like, I do, like, this is not, like, I have actually received backlash from Etsy shop owners. Yeah. I'm really sorry to our Etsy shop owners out there. We're not hating on you guys. You know, I think it's more about the anxiety of feeling that because someone else makes it, it therefore makes it more authentic. But if you feel that actually, oh wow, that craftsmanship of something that I really mm-hmm. appreciate that craftsmanship, and I don't have the skill to be able to do that, and I want to have that, I think yes. But I think as a beginner, I don't think you have to launch straight into that. I feel like as you go down the line, you might want to embellish your craft a little bit in that way. But I think it's better actually just to go out to your nearest forest or, you know, park or wherever, whatever nature's near you. Look for a fallen stick. You've got yourself a motherfucking wand. Off you go.
Yeah, you do.
You know,
yeah, you
do. That's your wand. Yeah, and that's exactly what I did. And that's what I still do. I
reclaim the flanny.
Reclaim the flanny. Kind of funny. I think for any new listeners, that must be the weirdest interjection that they've ever heard of.
Sorry. I was just thinking about the episode you did on wands, and I was like, wait.
There it is. Reclaim the flanny.
Oh, think, so funny.
Like, talking of the flanny.
Yes. I think, oh, okay.
Like, the divine feminine was one that I... And divine masculine even was one that really more so the divine feminine was one that really threw me off at the start of the craft. I felt that because I wasn't belong here. I felt that because I wasn't as big into moon type practices and worship and didn't really attune as much to the divine feminine, I could not be a witch.
I feel like there's too much gender roles put on the masculine and feminine, when in reality, it's more of like an archetype. It's not really like they're archetypes. They're not genderized. No. When we talk about the feminine and the masculine, a lot of the time it has to do with, like, I don't know, for example, like planets, for example. So I feel like it really stresses me out when people are like, oh yeah, I believe in the divine masculine, and I work with the masculine, and it's like this like really broad male type, you know, because I just feel like, again, you're putting yourself in a box, because we have masculine and feminine is more of a yin and yang situation where it's a balance. It's not about gender. It's a balance. Yes. And if we can find that balance, and Jung talks about this as well, he talks about the balance of it's the masculine and feminine, and trying to find those parts of yourself, you know, the masculine bits of you. Mm-hmm. Air quotations, and the feminine bits of you, air quotations.
Yes.
It's not about being a female and being into the divine feminine and having to work with the divine. If you do, that's totally cool. Yes. But like, you don't have to pick one based on your gender. No. That's where I'm going with this.
Yes. Yeah. And like, you know, it led me to kind of even question, like, what is the feminine? And I feel like it just plays into the hands of stereotypes of like motherly or matronly or pretty or quiet, you know, a masculine being loud, boisterous, battling, strong. Mm. And I feel that actually those features that I've just mentioned there, a woman can have those.
Oh, 100%,
I found it so problematic. But at the same time, I was constantly, especially Wiccan literature. If you're reading Wiccan literature, you're gonna find that everywhere. And again, I was like, it must be the truth. You know, the way you set up an altar, you know, it's feminine on the left, masculine on the right. I don't know. Other way around?
Ooh, couldn't tell you.
We don't know. We're not Wiccan.
We don't know.
But you know,
I don't even remember.
I would like really shit my pants about that. I'd be like, I'd want to put something down. Yeah. And I'd be like, is this masculine? I was like, well, it's a bit pointy, so I think that's masculine, like a penis. Like an athame is masculine, so it's similar. And you know, and anything that was bowl or chalice shaped, it was female because it looked like the womb.
It's also like putting genders on the elements too, isn't it? Like water and fire being masculine and water being feminine or whatever. Like, I just feel like sometimes, like, you can use that in your practice if it helps you. And I know a lot of people do in that sense, but I feel like putting too much pressure on yourself about having to know those things and use them in that way, again, stunts your growth as a practitioner.
Do you know what it reminds me of so much? Learning French.
What? Okay, enlighten me.
Well, like masculine and feminine. I was always just like you're saying,
yeah.
Like what? Like why does a chair have to be masculine or feminine? Like, well, like right? why do we have to, why is that even important?
Sits on a chair. Exactly. I don't get it either.
Why are we doing that?
I think it's not just French though. There are a lot of European languages. Yeah, German Spanish, does it. I was trying
Portuguese. Yeah.
Oh my God, like why? What's the point?
But then
you look at the English language and you're like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, English is stupid as a language. Let's not even get there. I liked learning Chinese because you didn't have any of that bullshit. Even pronouns.
Same with Korean.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. There you go. Just nice and easy. Keep it simple. You know, past tense, future tense, nice and simple. You don't conjugate verbs. Anyway, this is not like season of the linguistics.
Yeah, we're going off on a tangent now. There was something I wanted to talk about in regards to this, because back when I started, and I want to see if you did this as well, because this is something that I experienced when I started. So I started up again in my like late teens, early 20s. And when I started my practice the second time, like really going into it, it started with tarot cards, because that's what I used as a teenager. And that's what I really liked and identified with. And I really got heavy into tarot. And then I started picking up crystals bit by bit. I did not refer to myself as a witch. When people asked, I didn't even feel like I was a witch. I went into it and people would be like, oh, what are you? And I'd be like, spiritual. Like what there was no, you? I didn't call myself pagan. I didn't call myself a witch. Like I just felt like that was wrong in a way. And I regret that a lot. Not necessarily regret it, but I wish I could go back in time and tell myself or have someone tell me that it was okay to feel that way. And that it was okay that eventually I might feel comfortable enough to call myself that, because I didn't. And I don't know when I started to. I think maybe when I created my Obscure Witch account on Instagram, maybe that's kind of when I started referring to myself as a witch to everybody. But there was such a long period of time where I like fumbled back and forth between labels and like how I felt about it. And like, because I felt at the time that if I called myself a witch, maybe on multiple levels, that one, I would be, you know, criticized, or maybe I did feel at the time it was quite fluffy and there was a lot of misconceptions and there were a lot of weird people out there claiming to be witches that I did not subscribe to.
You don't
and agree
be,
with.
You don't want to be seen as those people that people think are maybe a little bit too out of the box.
Too much. Yeah.
Too much. A bit extra. I think some of it comes down to as well is the difference between a verb and a noun. It's season of the linguistics. I think of it as like, I like to write versus I am a writer. They're two very different things. And I think calling yourself a witch, you're naming yourself, you're identifying. Whereas saying that you have a spiritual practice, or you do tarot, there are these, it's about doing things, actions, but it's not about your identity. And I think that is one of the key differences. And actually, if you aren't naming yourself, you have the ability and capacity to either change the identity or to not be outed for that identity. You can be a bit flamboyant, or you can be gay. They're quite different, you know? It's like one of them is an action and mannerism. One of them is a sexuality. And I think with being a witch, there's a security and comfort in that. And I think for me as well, like being able to say, oh yes, I'm a witch, is by not giving myself that definition, I was able to slip out of it if I didn't feel comfortable with it. So being able to say I was spiritual. Having to say I'm a witch or a pagan.
It's a commitment, isn't it? It is almost like a commitment.
Yes.
Because you can't just be a witch one day and then you're like, I'm not a witch anymore, because you've built up that persona of yourself.
You can, but it's kind of awkward.
It's awkward. It's like, oh, what do you, you know, you're a week, you were a witch last week. How's it going? It's like, oh, not anymore. I feel like that's what it was too, because like when I restarted my practice, like when I really started getting into it, I wasn't sure if I was going to continue on with it, you know? And at the time my altar was like a windowsill, you know what I mean? So like, I don't know. Like I didn't want to fully commit. And again, like there was that stigma against it, which has changed in the last 5-6 years drastically. Like all of a sudden it was like, all of a sudden witchcraft and being a witch was super commercialized by like big brands, like Black Cult Craft, and I'm trying to think of like Killstar absolutely capitalized on witchcraft. And it just became like this fad, like all these hot alternative goth people, I was gonna say chicks, but men and women, of all genders, started, you know, wearing big shirts with witch on them. And you know, that Tumblr mug that had the word witch on it, or like, you know, X-Hex mugs and like all this stuff that like just started coming out. And all of a sudden you went from being taboo and weird to being a witch to being like super cool. And like all of a sudden we're all sitting there like, oh, like we're cool now. And it became an aesthetic to be a witch. It was very much an aesthetic, and it's just, it's gone downhill from there, hasn't it? Like, I mean to say, like,
for sure it has. And I think that's like for those starting out in the craft as well, I think witch aesthetics, again, I mentioned on the show before, I think is incredibly inhibiting, is a feeling that your craft and yourself have to look a particular way. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've stopped doing shit on Instagram, because I'm like, oh, it just looks crap. Like stuff that I'm doing, like stuff that I'm doing is so everyday basic. And I'm like, no one wants to see that. Like,
and this is something as well that I wanted to mention. And I've probably talk about this at a later date in another episode, but it's also the witchcraft community on the internet, isn't it? Because you feel judged. And you feel as well, like if you don't get as many likes or your picture isn't as aesthetic as some other witches, that you're not doing your practice right. And I've experienced that so much the last 2 years. And I know you have as well, where you just feel lost in your practice and you feel burnt out and disappointed in yourself because you work so hard to take this picture or do this particular ritual. And it's not even about it. It's not even about doing the ritual anymore. It didn't become about doing the ritual. It was about taking the best picture of your ritual and then just not doing anything with it.
Yes.
It was like, oh, look what I've done. But actually, really, I just set up everything pretty and then I walked away from it. I didn't sit at my altar. I didn't actually journal. I didn't, you know, sit with myself. I didn't, you know, do anything with the herbs that I picked. I just had to do it for the gram.
Yes.
And, that becomes so toxic. It becomes like a toxic cycle you put yourself into, and you burn out so hard.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of witchy Instagram influencers and you know, friends of mine on Instagram who are now having their accounts duplicated completely copied. Some have their identities duplicated for follows.
Yes.
And some are having their... they're like the aesthetics of their profile, some of their images reduplicated, the names.
Content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying necessarily they're just copy, as in it's a copy paste situation, but they're setting things up and they're using the same filters and they're talking about the same things. They have a logo that looks similar. And I think for someone starting out in the craft, that just gives you such a wrong picture and or image of what it actually is. I think you can begin and you can think it's like signing yourself up to a brand, and it's not that. I think that's what's really, really tricky for a lot of these new witches starting out, and they feel that it's got to look a certain way. It's got to feel or sound a certain way. You've got to journal. You don't always have to. I do journal, but like you don't have to. And like the frequency of journaling, you don't have to do it. You know, the way that a book looks, the way that you set something up, you know, 90% of my craft looks shit. It looks ugly. It looks boring. And it's like, you know, it's done on my kitchen top counter whilst I'm also preparing a dinner. I got some really good feedback, actually. I was doing an actual ritual. And before I was just about to get ready for things, I went on Instagram and I thought, you know what? this looks like a piece of shit. And I'm going to get on my story. And I just went, right, look, this is what it looks like. And like, you had my son's play equipment still in the circle. Yeah. You know, like there was no altar cloth on anything. Like there was just bits of like twigs and bits and bobs that I've collected. And I was like, this is what an authentic ritual looks like. Yeah. This is it. It's not pretty, you know, but again, even that, I don't think I would post that on my thing. What's that called?
Your feed? My feed. Rowan?
Yeah, my feed. I wouldn't post on that because I was just like, I'm like, why don't, like, it would ruin the feed because the feed is quite pretty.
This is it. Oh my God, this is it, right? And I have come to a bit of a slump in my practice at the moment and I'm not feeling it. And it's unfortunate. And I think that's caused because, you know, there's a lot of factors to it in my personal life, but on like a witchcraft basis, I think I stopped using Instagram for so long. Yeah. And because I stopped using Instagram for so long, because it was stressing me out and causing me so much, you know, physical and emotional pain. And there was so much toxicity going on. Yeah. In the community at the time. And things that I was experiencing that I kind of stepped back from it. And because I stepped back from it, I wasn't posting pictures. So there was no need to do ritual. There was no need to do tarot readings. There was no need to, like, cause I wasn't taking pictures of it. And it's such a catch 22, isn't it? Because you're like, oh, I want to do my practice and I want to do that, but I don't want it on the internet all the time because that's not the real meal, but also the real meal, the real me.
The real meal. Oh, a little snack. Meal deal.
that's not me.
Yeah.
But also, like, I don't have any drive to do it because I'm not posting. And that is such a vicious cycle. And I hate it. It is. And I don't.
It's interesting.
Like, I don't know what to do.
I told you yesterday, I bumped into someone in the real world who recognized me from Instagram, from the show. And that was, yeah, I was scared. And the first, which is exciting. Hello, if you're listening, thanks for the Starbucks. And the first thing that I said, I apologized. I was like, oh, what? I'm really sorry. Like, I don't really post things on Instagram anymore. Like,
God, Rowan.
That was like my first reaction was just like, oh, I'm sorry that you follow me. You know?
Oh my God, dude.
So there is an obligation. There is this feeling that you're supposed to be doing something in a certain way.
Yeah.
I think so many people have reached out to me and said, yes, I have this feeling. I have this worry. And this is what I feel. So I think if we can say that as many times as possible, I think that's important that, you know,
yeah, totally.
take that pressure off yourself because, you know, I'm here saying that it if you look at those earlier things in the feed, it just never really looked like that at all. No, ever.
My friend said something. Shout out Dan.
Hey Dan.
Dan the Virgo. Follow him on Instagram, guys. Go. Anyway. We were talking. I was like reaching out to him today and yesterday about it. And I was like admitting to him that like I have kind of lost them in my practice and I'm kind of a little scared because I don't know where I stand and what I believe and like what I want to continue on doing at the moment. And he said something to me that like really resonated and it was like, it'll come back to you. You know, don't force it. And we talked about not forcing it and just letting it come when it needs to, because there will be a point in my life where I feel drawn to it again and I feel connected to it and I want to connect to it. But I shouldn't be forcing myself to read up on like herbal witchcraft or like, you know, do ritual and spells or like learn a new skill in my practice, because that's going to put pressure on it and it's going to make me more stressed out and it's going to lead to more burnout and I'll probably not pick it up even longer down the road. So I think, you know, he's right. Like, just let it come back to you. It's there. Mm-hmm. It's there. It's not going to leave. Believe me, it doesn't leave you.
No.
But sometimes you need a break.
Yes.
You know?
Well, like, you know, think about it from like a river. A river doesn't always flow with the same strength and or capacity. It ebbs and it flows, but it's always a fucking river. Like even when it's dried up, it's still like, this is the riverbed. This is where the river runs through. So like it will always ebb and flow. And if you were to forcibly open a dam and flood a river, it's going to cause damage. So I do think, you know, just allow yourself to retreat. I think actually that's sometimes that's quite important to be able to retreat in it and to find the right moment to return. And I must admit, I go in these kind of ebbs and flows and waves of my practice, where I find I can be very, very active in the summertime, doing lots of kind of outdoor work, working with plants in my garden, really soaking in that sunshine, doing lots of outdoor rituals at nighttime because it's nice and warm. And then I get to the winter and I couldn't really give a shit. And for a lot of people, it's the opposite. Yeah. They find the winter time is a real big time for them. They're inwards and they're doing a lot of shadow work. They're working on themselves. They're doing lots of magic at that time. You know, and sometimes I can go a whole year and I think, oh, I've done very little. Like, I'm a terrible human.
The worst witch ever. Sandra Bullock would be so disappointed in me.
Did you ever watch The Worst Witch TV show?
The Worst
Witch? A book? I think it was a book or something. Was that Mildred Hubble? Maybe? No. Yes? Maybe.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
If anyone wants to send me any hate mail, you are more than welcome to do so over at SOTW with Rowan on Instagram.
And if you want to send me any hate or any tea and you feel personally attacked by today's episode, you can follow me at The Obscure Witch on Instagram. And that's OBSCURAWITCH, the Obscure Witch.
You're so good for spelling yours out. I'd like this ain't no spelling bee for me. You get what you're given. You struggle to find me.
And of course, don't forget to stay witchy, bitchy, sassy and classy. That's in order.
I'm really scared that Harmony Nice is going to hex me. Do you think it's going to happen?